Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. I hope you are staying cool today. It's supposed to be a really super hot day today, even hotter than the weekend. So I hope you can have a little time to yourself and do something fun and relax. Hopefully during this hour, because we have a couple of interesting stories to share with you today. The first, we're going to talk with Robin Terry, who is an editor with National Geographic. And National Geographic at the beginning of the year, or April, May-ish time, produced a whole series of books, which are fabulous little books. For example, we interviewed one guest who talked about the national parks in America. And they have field guides there for birds and ocean and, all kinds of different books. And the one we're going to talk about today is specifically for kids. It's National Geographic Kids. And it's about money. Now, bear in mind that I worked in the banking industry for 15 years. And I couldn't put this book down because I kept going, really? Really? It's just full of fun facts and pictures. It's very visual because it's for children. So we're going to talk with Robin Terry. I'm going to bring you that interview in just a couple of minutes. We pre-recorded that. And then coming up later in the show, we are going to talk live with Peter Brown Hoffmeister. He's a writer, rock climber, and public speaker, and he also tests gear for Nike. Good job if you can get it. He does also teach high school English. And he's got a couple of books out, two or three books out, but we're going to talk today about his novel, which is called Graphic the Valley. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of his outdoor program as well, which is down in Eugene, Oregon. Sounds like a lot of fun and something that I wish they'd open up for adults, quite frankly. But first of all, let me tell you about Robin Terry. The press release came along for Robin Terry's National Geographic's book, and it said this press release may be brief, but it's hard to put the book down, and I'm grown up, mostly. And so, of course, how could I not go on and read it then? We look at the history. The book looks at the history of money and what it's like in different countries, how it's made, what it looks like. And it was put together by Robin Terry. She's the editor of Everything Money. She's currently a senior editor at National Geographic Kids and the editor of the Everything series, which is a part of what I was telling you about. She, the whole series educates, entertains kids, uses recipes of photos, facts, and fun, and it's just a fun read. Great gift. So let's bring that interview to you right now, Robin Terry. Well, Robin, thanks for being with us today. This is a great book. It's called National Geographic Kids, Everything Money. Tell us why you put this together.
Well, I think we all know that kids are fascinated by money, just like adults are. And we ran some stories on money in our National Geographic Kids magazine, and the kids just loved it. So we got this idea, let's make a book. And we've just packed it with fun facts and information and also included some tips and tricks so kids can start to learn how to manage their money.
And lots of pictures and photos, too, which I think is important. I certainly enjoyed myself and learned a lot, too. What age group have you put this together for?
Well, this is really great for kids that are about 8 to 12 years old, and it's a great age for them to start learning about money, too. You know, kids get an allowance, a lot of kids get an allowance, and so early on they start learning about saving and spending and all of that, so it's never too soon.
Right. Now, I read that you've been editing National Geographic Kids books for 3 years. What a fun job you have.
Well, thank you. I think it's fun, too.
How long does it take you to put together something like this?
Oh, gosh, a book like this takes probably, it can take anywhere from 6 months to a year mm-hmm. To put together. together a book like this. So there's a lot of information in here.
So I'd like to look a little, if we can, at how the book's put together and some of the facts in there. I want to start with this one because I thought this was one of those one of those facts where you go, really? And that was that between 1912 and 1918, you could actually take your money to Washington to be washed and ironed.
Yes, isn't that crazy? And I can't resist making a joke about dirty money in Washington, but I
won't. So what was the process there?
Well, it was just, you know, if your money got dirty and rumpled, you know, you could travel to Washington and get it washed and ironed and returned to you. Fortunately, it's a little bit easier these days. You can just, if you have more than half your bill these days and it's torn, you can take it to a bank and get it reimbursed. However, if you have less than half the bill, you have to send it to the U.S. Treasury to get replaced.
Okay. And then this, because I've read lately a lot about them phasing out the penny. I know they've started to phase it out, or maybe have phased it out in Canada. It costs $1.67 to make a dollar's worth of pennies.
Yes, exactly. And it costs more than a nickel to make a nickel and more than a dime to make a dime, which is just seems so ridiculous. And there's lots of other fun facts in here, too. Like, for example, did you know that people spend $136 billion a year on sporting goods alone?
That was a shocker to me. That was like one of the top spends, wasn't it?
Yes, it's pretty amazing. And people spend $85 billion a year on movie tickets.
Yeah, that was a huge shock, too. Tell us about the Explorers Corner. You worked, you have an economist archaeologist at National Geographic. Tell us how he was woven through the book, if you would.
Sure. So this is Fred Hebert. He's an explorer here at National Geographic. And it's really fascinating what he does because he goes on archaeological digs and he looks for old coins and money. And it's really interesting what an old coin can tell you about a civilization, because you can look and see, you know, what the date is on the coin and where it was printed and all of that. So it's just a wealth of information about the culture.
Right. And one of the things that, of course, I love to look at these. You can get birthday cards that have your birth date on, and it shows you the history and how much things cost the day you were born. What a shock that always is. And you have a price comparison section in here. The cost of living.
Yes,
the cost of living in 1951 versus now.
Yes, you know, I think we've all heard our grandparents tell stories about how a loaf of bread cost a nickel when they were a kid. Well, now you can find out how much things really cost when your grandparents were kids. And so here's a little quiz for you. No cheating by looking at the book. How much did a new car cost in 1951?
Oh, I did read that. It was it about $1,500?
Yes, it was $1,500 for a new car.
Oh, wow. Good memory. the one that got me was the price of gas. Tell us how much the price of gas was in 1951.
Yes, 19 cents a gallon.
Unbelievable. They say that our salaries go up with the cost of living, but I don't think that's true of the past 4 or 5 years at least.
Yes, I think those were the good old days, I think, when it came to gas prices.
Another shocker for me, I really did learn a lot, which, you know, I worked in banking for 15 years, but I learned so much from reading this about money. It was really fascinating. One of the other shockers for me was how much money we lose through crime, whether it's blue-collar crime or, you know, scams or heists. Talk to us a little bit about that, if you would.
Yes, that is really amazing. And so one of the things that we include in the book is a lot of famous crimes and heists and things, which is something that kids are sort of fascinated by. And we talk about how there was a heist in 2010 from the National Museum of Modern Art in Paris, and there was a Matisse and a Picasso stolen, and it was worth $131 million. And to my knowledge, those paintings have not been recovered yet.
Yeah.
We also talk about, as you said, how much is lost in an average U.S. burglary, which is actually only $2,119. That doesn't sound too bad. But when you put it all together and you look at the annual losses, then it's just millions of dollars.
Yeah, it's quite shocking. And if you put everything together, I mean, I was really shocked. Maybe I shouldn't be, but internet fraud is way up there at $1 trillion. I mean, that's just amazing. Shows us how careful we have to be.
Yes, exactly.
Did you have a favorite fact in this book?
Well, you know, I think that my favorite part of the book is the section on counterfeiting. This is so fascinating. You look at a $100 bill and you don't realize all of the things that are embedded in that bill to thwart counterfeiters. So, for example, if you had a magnifying glass and you looked at Ben Franklin's collar on a $100 bill, you would see the words United States of America in tiny letters on his collar.
Yeah, fascinating. So what do you hope people take away from this book, Robin?
Well, you know, we hope that kids have a lot of fun reading this, but that they also learn some things along the way. Because we also talk about, you know, the history of money and the kinds of things that people used as money before there were coins and dollar bills. So people use shells and tea and even fish as money. So there's just lots of great information, and we hope that kids will also learn a trick or two about managing their own money.
Right. And this is part of the Everything series, which, I mean, you have some amazing books here about sharks, Egypt, cats, big cats, dogs. Just some amazing work that National Geographic is putting out.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, we come out with 4 of these books every year, and they're all really high interest topics among kids. And kids really love them, and they're very beautiful photographically, so they have that sort of signature National Geographic kids look, in addition to having fantastic information.
Well, Robin Terry, I thank you for joining us, and the book is called National Geographic Kids, Everything, Money, A Wealth of Facts, Photos, and Fun. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And welcome back, everyone. Laughing at Eric and his choices of music here. We are going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we're going to share a summer reading list with you. Some of this is compiled from the best of the best lists, and some of the suggestions were sent in by you, our listeners. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Join us live every Monday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150 or stream live from conversationslive.net.
Real people, real life, real radio. Really? Alternative Talk 1150.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And in in the essence of summertime, we have a little more relaxed show today. Normally, I cram so many guests in, as many guests in as I can, and as much information. Today, Eric and I are going to take some time to look over a summer reading list, which has put together a compilation of the best of the best and some suggestions from you, our listeners. And, you know, while we were playing the previous segment, the recording that I did earlier with Robin Terry of National Geographic Kids, I was thinking of summer rituals that we used to have as children. I'm going to ask Eric if he had any in a minute, so get that brain whirring. But one of the things we did when we broke up from school, both of my parents worked, both of them had their own businesses. And in those days, it was really, you know, quite unusual for women to work, let alone have their own business. My parents would take us up to the Midland Educational Store in Birmingham, where I grew up. And we'd get to pick out a whole bunch of books. Some of them were fun books, which I still have today. Lorna Doone was one of them I still have today. And some of them would be, you know, more educational, like math teasers and stuff like that. And this Everything series, which Robin Terry just talked about, Everything Money, but the Everything series is a great book to entertain kids through the holidays like that. So did you have any rituals, summer rituals, starting the holidays?
The holidays.
Well, anything. I don't want to put you too much on the spot there.
Summer rituals during school, I guess, was enjoy a lot of TV, because we didn't get to do so much of that during the rest of the year with schoolwork and all that. So, yeah, we just took it easy during the summer. Where I lived in California, very hot during the summer, so a lot of indoor activities, mm-hmm. I think, trying to stay cool and go up to the lake and have fun, you know. Basically, it was just about have fun, because when it was back to school, then it was a little more serious time, I think. So,
right, yeah. Right. It was like that for us, too. We lived by a green belt, even though I lived in a major city. And so there was a stream and there were old bomb shelters from, you know, my grandparents' days and things that we could go play, trees we could climb. There was a monastery we used to break into there and play in those grounds. So, but times have changed now, and parents tend to keep their kids closer to home.
And we did get out, and I don't want to make it sound like we stayed inside and watched TV for a whole summer. That didn't happen.
Right.
We'd get out and go camping as well, and had to get back to nature, and had a really great time doing that, and going to the coast during the summertime, one of my favorite memories, of course.
Yeah. Well, my dad was really anti-TV, so we were not allowed to have television on during the day, and it was very limited, and we actually went a couple of years actually without a TV altogether, because he just said, I'm sick of you all looking at this box. Get rid of it. But we read a lot. And so we're going to talk now summer reading. And I know that you have a couple of selections that you want. Why don't we kick off with one of yours?
Sure. One of my favorite stand-up comedians, Jim Gaffigan, has just released a book called Dad is Fat, which is very funny. He actually has five children, which is kind of uncommon in this day and age. It used to be a lot more common to have big families, but he jokes that he was Catholic growing up, and his wife is really Catholic. She's Shiite Catholic, and and so they have this big Catholic family now all of a sudden with five kids. And so Dad is Fat is just all about him and his wife, you know, trying to raise five kids in New York City. And also being a comedian. And if you've seen any of his stand-up, you know that he's very, very funny guy.
I haven't
actually
heard of him, but I'm sure he's... I know you follow comedians a lot, so...
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people know Jim Gaffigan from his Hot Pocket jokes, and he talks a lot about food.
Oh, okay.
Bacon and stuff like that. So if you're a fan of his stand-up at all, and if you haven't seen his stand-up, just plug him into YouTube, and yeah, I think you'll like what you find. But I'm pleased to say that the book is very reminiscent of his stand-up, and just a fun, a very funny, light read that is also, you know, kind of nice, because it is talking about his family. So
okay. And the name of the book again, tell us?
Dad is Fat, which
Dad
is something
is
that one of his kids said to him. So,
well, yeah, kids, you know, they're very honest, if nothing else.
Exactly.
Well, here's what surprised me. I thought when we opened this up to listeners and said, hey, send us your favorite summer read. And that hasn't ended. If you have a favorite summer read, you can still email that to me at info@conversationslive.net and we'll squeeze it in somewhere. But I was expecting you all to have these light summer reads. And I was surprised by how dark some of the books were. But this one was sent in by Shannon T, and she did say it's a little dark and sometimes disturbing. It's very intense, she said, but she could not put it down. And it's called The Tree of Forgetfulness by Pam Durbin. There's murder in there. Some of the characters are a little menacing. And she actually said it's probably about as dark and disturbing as you want to read in the summer, but it takes place in the autumn of 1926, or that's when it starts, in New York City with a newspaper reporter who's covering the story of a lynching. And I'm just skipping through the narrative here. The newsman digs into the events surrounding the killing, and the governor of South Carolina seems destined to whitewash it. So very intriguing there. And that was sent in by Shannon T, The Tree of Forgetfulness by Pam Durbin. Another couple of, we'll get the dark ones out of the way first. psychologically terrifying debut thriller, Lottie Margaux, Kiss Me First is, you know what? I think I got this wrong. I think I cut and pasted somewhere wrong here. So let me just look. Oh, yeah, that's right. It's called Kiss Me First. Will you have, it says you'll be questioning your presence on the World Wide Web, which I think some of us need to do anyway. But it's about that. And it's for those who like shivers and mystery. And then The Blood of Heaven follows two preacher sons as they tear through 19th century West Florida. Kent Wascombe is the author there. The Blood of Heaven is the book. And those were sent in by Mikey B. So let's have another one of yours.
All right. I'm wondering if that's the Mikey B I know. Probably not. But this one comes from Ryan W., who writes about The Ocean at the End of the Lane by Neil Gaiman. He says the book is about a man who returns to his childhood home in Sussex, England. Where have you been there?
Oh, yeah. Know it well.
I've never been, but one of these days we'll check it out. Anyway, he says 40 years earlier, a young girl swore she would protect him from the darkness unleashed by a man's suicide. So it sounds like another kind of dark thriller, but
I think I passed a couple of those over to you. So,
yeah, well, you know, it's funny how even, you know, during the summer when we're having fun, sometimes these dark thrillers are what we really crave for our reading or our,
I think for me,
TV or movie viewing.
For me, it's about escapism, really, because, you know, it takes time to sit and read a book. So if I'm going to sit and read it, I want to go someplace other than where I normally am.
Right, right. Well, speaking of dark thrillers, his other recommendation is Joyland. From Stephen King.
Oh, you know, a couple of listeners recommended that too.
Yeah, and again, this is about trying to get over his ex, a college student. Devin accepts a job at the amusement park Joyland. A promising employee, Devin learns of a horrible murder that happened mere summers before and that the ghost of the dead girl may still haunt the funhouse. Now, I actually heard Stephen King doing an interview about this book, and he says originally that The Shining was supposed to be set in an amusement park. So he's really coming back to his roots with this story. So it does sound like an exciting read.
Yeah, and I may be wrong, but I think his son actually wrote this book, Joyland. I remember reading one of the reviews on it, and I think his son wrote it or co-wrote it with him.
That's possible, but Stephen King is the name brand on the book
name
anyway.
Brand. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. The brand, yes, definitely.
So very interesting. I'm sure that'll be a pretty exciting, heart-skipping read.
Yeah, I've read some of his books, and a couple of them I really, really liked, and a couple of them I couldn't get through. So, but I know if you're a Stephen King fan, you are a Stephen King fan.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, let me do one here. This is from Michelle Bailey in Spokane, and it's for fans. She said, people who liked The Memory Keeper's Daughter by Kim Edwards would like this book. It's called The Light Between Oceans. That sounds a bit more beachy, doesn't it?
Yes.
The Light Between Oceans, and it's by M. L. Stedman. And it's based in Australia. Tom Sherbourne is the protagonist. After 4 years on the Western Front, he returns home to Australia and takes a job as a lighthouse keeper on a small island, bringing along his wife, Isabel. Years later, she, after two miscarriages and a stillbirth, she still hears a baby's cries coming from a boat washed up on the shore, and makes a decision that affects the rest of their lives. The person who recommended this, Michelle, said this is absolutely, this is her term, unputdownable. So she obviously enjoyed that. And again, that's called The Light Between Oceans by M.L. Stedman. And then another one that she recommended, and she said this would be people who like Julie Oranger's The Invisible Bridge or Downton Abbey fans would enjoy this. It's called The Lavender Garden by Lucinda Riley. In this novel, she describes it as a novel of intrigue and passion set in modern-day south of France. Oh, my favorite place. The south of France and Nazi-occupied Paris. I mean, you know, I could do without the occupation bit there.
Sure.
But I do. I love south of France and I love Paris.
I hear it's Nice there. Oh, sorry. Keep going.
Oh, dear. Yes, keep going. And one woman inherits much more than she bargained for. And I think we'll leave it there. But it's about what happened to her aristocratic family during World War II. And she discovers an epic story of family secrets and betrayal. Sounds like good beach reading to me.
It does, yeah. And I've got one more to recommend.
Yes,
that's
please,
all right.
Go ahead.
There's a publishing house called Arcadia Publishing that does these little books. You may have seen them at gift shops and stuff. They do small history books. They're called Images of America. And there's pretty much one for like every city in Washington. So if you're a fan of history and especially local history, I think they're worth picking up. The latest one I got was the Seattle's Music Venues one, which is pretty interesting, and lots of pictures, historic pictures, and lots of text to put those pictures in context. So very interesting. I'm kind of a history buff myself,
right.
So and especially local history is very fun to read. So there's probably one about your town, whether it be Spokane or Tacoma or Seattle. I saw one for Mercer Island recently. So now they're branching out and doing a little more in-depth with Seattle with the music venues. As you know, I'm a music fan, so
right.
This stuff really interesting to me. So I say pick it up if you get a chance.
Excellent. And I just realized, I'm sorry, Eric, I read two of yours that were on your list.
It's all good.
I forgot to pull them. I forgot to pull them off my list here. So we've just got a couple more minutes left. So let's see if we can get a couple more out here. If you like nonfiction, then and you're somewhat creative, like reading about people's creative process and everything, this sounds interesting to me. I thought I'm going to have to pick this one up. And this came up on numerous lists from Publishers Weekly to just name it. I saw it on a whole bunch of lists. And it's called 41 False Starts, Essays on Artists and Writers. And Janet Malcolm is the author. And she talks about, well, if you read the book, according to the person who reviewed it here, she said, I've loved visiting these homes, studios, letters, legacies, and romances, and most of all, experiencing art and literature filtered through Janet Malcolm's nimble mind and gorgeous prose. And that, again, is called 41 False Starts, Essays on Writers and Artists and Writers.
That sounds interesting. And you know what? I'm hoping that you maybe still have a copy of that National Geographic book on money. I know it's for kids, but that interview really piqued my interest. Being a history buff, as I say, that the fun facts about money really made me think that could be a great summer read for any age.
I couldn't put it down. I spent 15 years in banking, so
right.
You know, I was like, really? I didn't know that. We learn a lot on our show here. You know, one of the things that she mentioned in there was how people barter.
Mm-hmm.
Some people barter. And of course, we all know there's this other currency now. We did a whole show. Did you remember doing, we did a show on that with an international economist who talked about how communities are developing their own currencies. And since then, I'd never heard of it until I did that show. And since then, I've come across all kinds of communities that are creating their own kind of currency. Let's see if I can get another couple in here. Red Sparrow by Jason Matthews. It's a debut spy thriller. This was reviewed for Publishers Weekly, and they usually give pretty straight responses. And they thought it was the best in the genre that he'd read in a long time. So I might like that. The author, a retired CIA officer, told some great stories about his 33 years in the agency at the lunch his publisher hosted for him recently in New York. And each chapter in the book concludes with a recipe for a dish consumed in the text. Well, how could we not like that?
That's an interesting tie-in that I'm not sure I've come across before, that they did put a recipe for a dish in the text. That's interesting. I like that.
A lot of people do. I have a friend who does it in all of her books. Susan Wiggs, we talked with, was it a couple of weeks ago? She does it too. A lot of authors do it.
So you can really put yourself into the character's shoes. I like that.
Yeah, years ago, I was a huge fan of Lawrence Sanders' books, the crime books, and it was a retired detective or a detective about to come up to retirement age. And he would always make these great big fat sandwiches for himself. And they were like so descriptive, I'd find myself running off to the kitchen to make a sandwich. But my sandwiches never turned out anywhere near like his sandwiches, sadly. Do you have any more on your list?
Nope, that's it for me.
Okay, well, let me see. I've got a couple more here, I think. Let me just grab here. We did that one. So let's talk about The Engagements by J. Courtney Sullivan. And this is about four couples who struggle with what it means to be in a marriage, while one young female copywriter works on a new ad line for the De Beers Diamond campaign, which becomes the iconic A Diamond is Forever. And this came in from Lisa Kay, and she said, why should you buy this book? Why should you read this book? Sullivan's a very gifted writer. Her two previous novels, Commencement and Maine, were bestsellers, and Maine was named a Time magazine best book of the year. And it has a madman story, a madman-like storyline to it. And that was recommended by listener Lisa, as I said, but it's also recommended by just about every hot list out there. And we've got a couple more here. Oh, I must get this, and this is from Candy W. I know this is kind of scattered, but we had so many, it was difficult to choose.
It's great that there's so many great options out there to read this summer, you know?
I know. This is a Jewish story. It's called The Mothers. It was sent in by Candy W. And she just said that she's in love with everything that Jennifer Gilmore writes. And she's found the words to voice up the pain of this story. It's kind of a long description here. I'm trying to pull out the novel is based on Gilmore's real life experience with the open adoption system. And the writing is so real, so immediate, at times so raw, that the reader goes through an emotional journey, including humor, with the characters experiencing highs and lows, doubts and confidence, disappointment and relief. It's the kind of reading roller coaster one experiences when reading a passionate love story. And although the object of the passion may be as yet unborn, this truly is a love story in so many subtle ways. And that was sent in the review and the information about that by Candy W. It's called The Mothers. All right. Well, our guest is patiently waiting on the phone for us, so we'll take a very quick break. Thank you so much to everybody who sent in their favorite read. And if you have books that you'd like to recommend, feel free always to send those in. info@conversationslive.net. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Dr. Penny Lloyd at Connection the Best Medicine, we cover the world of living successfully with your animal friends. This week, July 7th, it's the first Sunday of July, and I've been so busy, I don't know what we're doing. It could be a Vet Sunday, it could be a Behavior Training and Healing Sunday with me, or we could have a surprise guest. Tune in to find out. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL. Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Outside the box, outside the norm, inside your radio. Alternative Talk 1150.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And my guest is Peter Brown Hoffmeister. He's a writer, rock climber, public speaker, and gear tester for Nike. He lives in Eugene, Oregon with his wife, Jenny, and two daughters and teaches at South Eugene High School. He teaches literature, creative writing, outdoor pursuits and survival. And we're going to talk today a little about his new book called Graphic the Valley. It is a novel. Peter Brown Hoffmeister, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm glad to have you. And I want to kick off today's show by asking about one of your other books that you've written, because you've written several. Your articles have appeared in Climbing Magazine, Rock and Ice Magazine, Gripped Magazine. You've written, your other books include The End of Boys and Let Them Be Eaten by Bears, A Fearless Guide to Taking Our Kids into the Great Outdoors. And I wanted just to ask you, because I didn't research this, but The End of Boys, what is that about?
Well, that's a memoir of my teenage years, and unfortunately, I made a lot of bad decisions during my teenage years and got expelled or earned expulsions from three schools and ended up in rehab in East Texas and then ran and lived in a bus station for a while. So that's the story of me kind of falling apart and then starting to come back together.
Oh,
but it's also a memoir about the love between me and my brother Cooper.
Okay, so, you know, the title just kind of intrigued me there. I thought, what is that about, The End of Boys?
Yeah, it was kind of the end of our childhoods because of our decisions and our actions.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about how we reconcile to adult life after making these so many bad decisions. And we were rough kids.
Well, it explains a little then how maybe you came up with the idea for Graphic the Valley, because your character there is not a normal character, but he doesn't have a normal upbringing by any means. Tell us a little bit about the protagonist in Graphic the Valley and how he was raised.
Yeah, so the protagonist in the novel is named Tenaya, and it's an allusion to Chief Tenaya, but He's one of the families that's lived in the valley long term. During the Depression, families were able to drive into Yosemite Valley for $1 and live there year round and eat fish, breakfast, lunch, dinner, pulling it out of the Merced River. So seemingly he's one of those families, but it turns out that his family is one of the original families that never left. So he was born in a car. He lives illegally off of the 120 road going into Yosemite Valley. And he's coming of age, too. He's 19, 20 in the novel, and so he's trying to figure out, you know, what he values about his world and this life and the valley and the national park and what's important to him and, you know, how is he going to find a long-term life and love and all those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. And it's a, you know, the book explores mythical strength, worldly greed, love, lust, epic destruction. And of course, it revolves a lot about Yosemite, a place of opposites. You say that you know Yosemite like the back of your hand. Why Yosemite? What is it appealing? As a rock climber, what appeals to you about Yosemite?
It's just so incredibly beautiful, you know, and driving into Yosemite Valley for the first time, you're kind of overwhelmed by the grandeur. I mean, there's some places in the United States that are like that, the east side of the Sisters in Oregon or the east side of the Tetons in Wyoming. But Yosemite Valley is one of those places where it is almost mythical. It doesn't quite seem real. So I wanted to set a novel in that location, and I'd spent 150 nights camping in the valley, and maybe I don't know it as well as my publisher says I know it, but I know it pretty well, and I spent a lot of time there rock climbing and hiking and swimming and exploring, and it's just an incredible place to go.
Right. It is a beautiful place, and I know when I've taken photographs there, sometimes I understand what you mean, because I look at the photographs and I'm like, that does not look real. It looks as though it's been touched up. It looks as though it's been photoshopped.
So, yeah, it's amazing, and that's the great thing about the natural world. I just spent the last few days camping and exploring with my 8-year-old, and she wanted to hike down this bowl into a waterfall on a river in the mountains, and it's about a 70-foot waterfall, and we hiked down right next to the base of the waterfall, and we were looking down the river, and there was a shade of blue that wasn't even real, and I thought, you can't even Photoshop this picture and make it look this good. And so, I don't know, sometimes I feel like that in Yosemite too.
Yeah. So what is it about rock climbing that appeals to you?
I think I love the mental and physical challenge that goes hand in hand. You know, you have to totally focus your mind. It's almost like you're playing chess while you're using your body at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's risk and precision and physicality, and so it's really demanding to be precise and to climb beautifully, and I so rarely climb anything close to beautifully, it's one of those things where I think you could climb your entire lives and other people at some point might call you an expert, but you'll never feel like an expert, you know?
Right. Well, I think anytime you're dealing with nature, you know, nature's always got the upper hand a little, you know, you never quite know when she's going to kick some dirt in your face. And, you know, it's a very, I like water sports, and I was telling my godson the other day, don't be afraid of the water, but have a very, very, very healthy respect for it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So,
yeah, and I saw that you're a kayaker.
Yes, I love to kayak.
Oh, that's great.
Yes, I love to kayak. It's something about just being out there with the wind in your hair, and it's so peaceful, and you're just so close to the water. And, of course, if anything, with teeth popped up, I tip over instantly, but
it's hard. It's difficult. I also saw that you have a dog named Dylan Thomas.
I do.
And I have a dog named Bob Dylan, the boy dog, but when he's in trouble, I call him Dylan Thomas.
Oh, that's so funny. Well, I call mine Dylan, but I only call him Dylan Thomas when he's in trouble.
So they share that.
Yeah, that's funny, because a lot of people ask me, did you name him after Bob Dylan? And I'm like, no, Dylan Thomas, because he's a Welsh border collie.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so there's something just about being out in nature. It helps me as a writer and helps me with other creative projects that I work on. Do you find the same thing, that it helps you creatively?
Oh, yeah. And just being out helps my mind to slow down, you know, and writing's so cerebral, you know, I've got to, even if it's just the backyard, I've got to sit in the backyard and just think through how I'm going to solve a plot. It doesn't work as well to do that inside for me. And so taking long camping or climbing or river trips really helps me get ready to write the next section of the next book or revise the next draft or, you know, work through something that I'm struggling with and not doing well with.
Right. Well, you're very open about reviews. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about how you handle reviews. I know you post most of them on your website for everyone to see, good or bad. And that's an interesting thing, because I know other authors who just, they try to bury all the bad ones. So because there are always bad ones out there in today's anonymous, you know, blogosphere. We're going to talk a little bit about how you handle rejection and handle success. What makes success for you? You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Peter Brown Hoffmeister, and his book is Graphic the Valley.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Ahead of the talk radio curve, naturally. Alternative Talk 1150.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest in this segment is Peter Brown Hoffmeister. His new novel is called Graphic the Valley, based in Yosemite Valley. And Peter, I wanted to, before we get into rejection and how you handle that and deal with it, yeah, I want to ask you about an essay that was published that you wrote called Confessions of an Almost Serious Climber. And you start out by saying, I hoped that my best friend would fall. Tell us about this. That's not a partner I'm thinking I want to go with, but I know the end of the essay. So tell us about why you wrote this essay.
I was just thinking about how competitive we get sometimes and how we want to succeed so badly that we're almost willing to watch people we love fail, you know. And in writing, I've seen that, where writers will hate other writers who get better reviews than them or have better sales records or something like that. And so I just wanted to admit a moment where I had a really terrible thought so that I could win a game, basically.
Mm. And I, the rock climbing world, like most sports, is very competitive too. I mean, I know some people who really would tug on your rope a little to hold you back so they can get to the top first.
I've heard of that. I've never done that or had that happen to me, but I just fall on my own. But
there you go.
I guess it's possible. That'd be pretty terrible.
Yeah, and I wanted just to ask you about this in that same essay here. You said that you were talking about the dark recesses in our minds, and as an excuse you try to blame your Viking blood and said to your wife you want to be sent to Valhalla. You want to go out, you don't care about gold or maidens, you want glory. I want to be burned on a boat set adrift on the ocean. You do know that they put the wives on the boat alive with the husbands, right?
Yeah, I left that part out. Oh my gosh, yeah.
All right, so let's get back to Graphic the Valley, and let's talk about rejection first of all, because you've had some great reviews out there, some really good reviews, and you've had some not so good reviews, and you've been honest and posted both on your website. You wrote something on the blog. You said you had 61 rejections in a row. That was your record. You said 61 rejections in a row of stories, poems, and a manuscript. So talk to us a little bit about how you do handle rejection.
I love in Malcolm Gladwell's book where he's talking about the 10,000 hour theory, and it's actually a Swedish psychologist who came up with it, but that whole fallacy of the precocious genius, you know. I think, like any great athlete or any great writer or musician, you have to accept that you're going to fail hundreds, if not thousands, of times if you're going to do anything worthwhile. And I've gotten pretty good at failing. So I'm hoping someday to do something good, you know? But, I've definitely earned more than 400 rejections, and I keep them and catalog them and try to publish some good rejections on my website. Like, a writer wrote in from Amazon and called me a self-absorbed, arrogant jackhole, and I thought that was pretty good. I don't know. I mean, I just think that you have to fail. I love Michael Jordan's theory on failure, is that the only reason he hit game-winning shots is because he'd failed so many times mm-hmm. in practice and in games
yeah.
before. And so I do. I'm really grateful when I get a good review, but I do also try to read the one-star Amazon reviews to, you know, read what people are saying when they really hate something, too.
Mm-hmm.
Try to give them a voice, too.
Right. And I think in the moment of creating or producing or whatever we're doing, you know, even if we're just going through our day-to-day job, we have to remember that, you know, practice takes perfect and not beat ourselves up when things go badly for us. I want to read this because this reviewer loved your book. And it was on a blog I found. And she said, it is late. This is about halfway through. She said, it is late and I read. It is early morning and I read. I have entered, I realize, the realm of a man who knows landscape and bear scat and mountain lions and native lands, the interiors of hitchhikers' cars. Also a man who is inventing language. I think of James Joyce. How does that sit with you?
I was so grateful to get that blog review. That's Beth Kephart, who's written for the New York Times, and I was just so thankful that she understood what I was trying to do with the novel, you know? But I'm sure there are other people that won't love it as much. I mean, I was really happy today to get a starred review with Booklist, and that was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's great to get good reviews. It's great, but it's art, and literary novels are art, and some people will love them, and some people will hate them. And
right, right.
My mom's an oil painter, and so she's been rejected, and I've watched her get rejected so many times, and that's just part of doing art. You know?
Yeah, it's part of life.
Yeah.
This book has been described by others as a retelling of Samson and Delilah. Is that a good description, you think?
I think so. I definitely kept that structure in mind. I didn't hold to it perfectly because I didn't want it to just be kind of a plug-and-pop structure, but I thought a lot about him as a young Samson and then Samson's three-part life with the first relationship and then the caves and then, you know, the violence and adversity of his third part of his life that people know a little better. That's the part with Delilah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was definitely thinking about that as mm-hmm. I structured the novel.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, novels become whatever they are on draft 6 or 7, and then they're not quite what they started out to be, you know?
Right. We've talked about rejection. We've talked about failure. What does success, how do you define success?
I would say success is finishing something that you're happy with, where you get to a place and you're saying, I'm glad I did that, and I feel like that worked the way I wanted it to work. And maybe people love it and maybe people won't, but, you know, I think success has to be personal, definitely.
Mm. And you have a program down in Eugene, Oregon, which I told listeners at the top of the hour, I wish they'd make for adults because it's a thematic comprehensive literature and outdoor pursuits program. It sounds like fun.
It is. It's so fun. I was doing a primitive fire workshop in the park with my high school students right near the end of the year. And I thought about an hour into this workshop where I'm working with two wonderful other adult volunteers and we're teaching 30 kids how to make primitive fire. I thought, I'm getting paid right now. This is my job and I do this for fun. So,
well, that's
good.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you are the co-founder and director of that. It's called the South Eugene High School's Integrated Outdoor Program. And I know listeners can find more about that on your website.
Sure.
They can find out more about you at peterbrownhoffmeister.com. Final, very quick thought you'd like to leave our listeners with. We only have about 30 seconds.
You know, I'm just grateful for any reader. I'm thankful that you had me on, and I'm thankful for anyone who wants to read, whether they love it or not.
Super. Well, Peter Braunhofmeister, thank you so much for coming with us. Safe rock climbing to you, and enjoy that Yosemite. I love that place too. It's fabulous.
Thank you.
And I want to thank all of our listeners for joining us today. You can reach me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. If you have any questions about today's show, or again, you know, you are always welcome to send us book recommendations, author recommendations. We're happy to take a look at them. You can also reach me at info@conversationslive.net, info@conversationslive.net, and follow us on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair, and Facebook, of course, at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Thank you for being with us. Stay cool if you can. Enjoy the weather while we have it. It's pretty fabulous. And thanks for being with us. Live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.